Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Nicholas Hamasevich, Director of Research and Academic Affairs at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we talk with Nathan Bouchon-Mostafaga about the academic paper series report he has written for KEI on deciphering Chinese PLA media commentaries on North Korea. Mr. Nathan Bouchon-Mostafaga is the former editor of the China Brief Journal at the Jamestown Foundation. Before that, he was a research fellow for the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. He has also worked for the International Institute for Strategic Studies, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, and the Center for International and Strategic Studies at Peking University. Nathan and I discuss his paper, the different media venues PLA commentators use to talk about North Korea, the influence of the PLA on Chinese policy toward North Korea, the different views of North Korea by the various branches of the PLA, and much more. Nathan Bouchon-Mostafaga, welcome to Korean Context.
Thank you very much.
You've just written a great academic paper series report for us on the Chinese PLA and how you have some commentators that are connected with the PLA talking about North Korea in the Chinese press. Is this a new phenomenon? Is this something that's recent?
No, this is not a new phenomenon. Chinese PLA-affiliated commentators have been talking about North Korea for a long time in the Chinese press. What's new, and what I try to look at in my paper for KEI, is maybe how this discussion has evolved in recent years, especially since 2006, but even notably just from 2013, after North Korea's nuclear test that year, how PLA commentators talk about North Korea. Obviously, PLA has historically been viewed as pretty supportive of North Korea, but increasingly there are voices from PLA commentators that are critical of North Korea, and this is one of the interesting things that I try to look at in my paper.
Is the PLA influential in the making of North Korean policy for the Chinese government?
That's a very good question. I think the PLA does hold some influence over North Korea policy. However, the amount of policy influence is really a good question. Andrew Scovell, in an upcoming book chapter he's publishing later this year with Phil Saunders, really takes a comprehensive look at the PLA's specific role in North Korea policy. And he concludes that it doesn't have a whole lot of influence. My research, looking at China-North Korea relations under Hu Jintao, suggested that the PLA was likely the second most influential actor in the Chinese system on North Korea policy. Chinese policy, especially under Hu Jintao, was what I called a bifurcated policy management process. And really what that means in simple terms is an increasingly centralized decision-making process for the important decisions. How is China going to respond to a nuclear test? How is China going to respond to a missile test? Should we abandon North Korea? These are decisions made at the highest level of the Chinese government. But the implementation of these decisions, implementations of how China is going to enforce UN sanctions. These are decisions, implementation measures that are taken by other members of the Chinese government at a lower level. And these actors are increasingly numerous. There are more and more people involved in implementing China's North Korea policy, whether that's somebody like a local businessman, or even a provincial level SOE official, or a academic who now speaks on North Korea issues in the Chinese press. These are all people who 20 years ago weren't really doing that. It seems to have shifted a little bit in terms of policy decision-making processes from Hu Jintao to Xi Jinping. So Xi Jinping, as we've seen across a wide swath of Chinese foreign policy issues, has consolidated more power more quickly than Hu Jintao. So Xi Jinping seems to be really the one making a lot of the big decisions for Chinese foreign policy, whether that's likely South China Sea issues or East China Sea issues with Japan, including North Korea issues. He seems to be taking increasing prominent role in that decision making. So for North Korea, while the PLA may have played a role under Hu Jintao, and certainly still plays a role in understanding the security implications of North Korea for China, it is understandable that Xi Jinping's greater control over policy would thus mean a diminished role for the PLA in influencing specific contours of North Korea policy.
Okay, so the PLA has some influence, not a lot, on policy. But they're talking about North Korea in the media. Why do they have these guys coming out and starting to talk about North Korea more and more in the press?
So it's important to note that the PLA does not only talk about North Korea in the Chinese press. These PLA commentators talk about a whole range of domestic but mainly foreign policy issues in the Chinese press. Most of these people are propaganda people. They've come up in the public messaging political system. They rarely have operational or extensive on-the-ground experience. Luo Yuan has claimed some operational combat experience before, but he was never at a senior position to command troops. So they have a special training to handle speaking to the media, and that training really encourages or supports their mission. And these PLA commentators, according to Andrew Chubb, has done a lot of work on this issue, and I think has really got it right, are really propaganda artists. Their job is to shape Chinese domestic opinion on certain issues. They are not given a script. They seem that they write their own things. They are obviously chosen to be PLA commentators because their views naturally conform to party thinking on major issues. And they also understand the contours of what's acceptable at that moment on that issue.
So how do they figure out this line? Is it part of that training? Is it part of just kind of seeing what the other guy said and saying, okay, that guy said this, so I talk about that issue? How are they trying to navigate those boundaries of what they can talk about?
So I think it's hard for foreign analysts to understand the specific contours and the specific rules of how do you set those contours for PLA commentators. Obviously, their training, their background, their very status as a commentator suggests they understand those. Now, whether that's specifically receiving talking points from the PLA, which doesn't seem that actually happens, but whether there's specific list of issues they have to discuss and they have to write articles on, or they're encouraged to through their interactions with bosses who are giving instructions from their bosses, or whether it's just talking with fellow commentators, they do occasionally step out of line. Dr. Pollock, at the event we just had, mentioned Zhu Zhonghu, who I cover in the paper, and Zhu Zhonghu in 2005 made some very strong statements about U.S.-China conflict and potential nuclear scenarios, and was criticized by the U.S. government for those comments. The Chinese government responded that he was airing his personal views, but nonetheless, Dr. Pollock added that Zhu Zhonghu was apparently banished, in a sense, from Beijing and had to recover and is now back in the media. But apparently, Zhu Zhonghu's career plateaued after his misstep in 2005. So there are warning signs for other PLA commentators that they have to stay in between the lines on certain issues. And I think this encourages a likely amount of self-censorship. And so one of the things I try to delve into a little bit in my paper is looking at this tension between serving the party and following the party guidelines on talking points for, you know, general issue sentiments versus appealing to, encouraging, and maintaining nationalist credentials with an increasingly nationalist netizen population of internet users. I think sometimes, increasing the North Korea issues, those come into conflict where the Chinese government either plays down issues or doesn't play them up enough as Chinese citizens want. You know, when likely North Korean soldiers kidnap Chinese fishermen, hold them for ransom, Chinese public understandably gets very upset by that. And the Chinese government, maybe behind the scenes has said something, but publicly has been fairly restrained. And I think that's created a lot of tension.
These guys you mentioned and they mentioned the paper, are they retired members of the PLA? Or are they still, do some still have official responsibilities with the PLA?
So most of these people are retired. The Wang Hongguang, who I lead off the article talking about his really famous December 2014 article criticizing North Korea, was the former deputy commander of the Nanjing Military Division. Understandably, we assume thus he's retired. Luo Yuan is affiliated with several PLA think tanks and was at one point part of the Chinese legislature, but he is, I believe, also retired. Other members are, you know, PLA academics, so they are not official spokesmen for the PLA. However, their entire role is that they toe the party line and present one image of the PLA to Chinese and foreign audiences.
And are some of these commentators part of the army, part of the PLA, or is there a Navy Air Force breakdown as well?
I believe most of the commentators are affiliated with the PLA Army, but there are PLA Navy and PLA Air Force commentators. A good example of PLA Navy commentator would be In Zhuo, who was a Navy Admiral, and I believe Dai Xu was previously Air Force. I've previously, you know, written about PLA views of North Korea being different between the services. Possible that the Chinese PLA Army views North Korea differently than the Chinese PLA Navy or the Chinese PLA Air Force. When I was doing my research, it was hard to distinguish a reflective relationship between the two, that In Zhuo as a PLA Navy commentator maybe represents PLA Navy sentiment about North Korea. You know, I didn't quite see that representation.
Are there certain publications or outlets that these commentators are using to talk about North Korea?
PLA commentators publish on a wide range of platforms, but it seems, especially for North Korea issues, the most popular one is Global Times, usually in Chinese, and very rarely are there articles translated into English. They also write or are interviewed in the Chinese media, so they can write for People's Daily, People's Daily Online. They can also be on Weibo. The Luo Yuan was the first one to be approved to use Weibo. Some of them have accounts, some of them don't. Some of them use them frequently, some of them don't. Luo Yuan searched his Weibo feed, and I believe he's tweeted 10 times on North Korea. Only one of them got more than 50 responses. So they have some interaction with Chinese netizens on North Korea issues. They've also hosted web chats. They also appear on TV, so they can appear on CCTV, the state-run media. They can appear on Phoenix TV, which is a Chinese sanctioned but technically private broadcasting company. They occasionally speak with the foreign press, but that's very difficult for foreign reporters to do. Also likely hard for PLA commentators to get approval, even if they wanted to. So there are a range of mainstream Chinese language publications that they interact with. There are also a host of internally focused PLA publications that a whole separate group of writers publish on for real expertise on North Korea and other military issues. But what I was looking at mainly was public commentary in mainstream Chinese press, the image the PLA is presenting to domestic and foreign audiences. One good example of a PLA expert on North Korea who publishes for PLA consumption and not generally for public consumption would be Wang Yisheng. He's a colonel. So Colonel Wang seems to be a pretty traditionalist on North Korea, seems to be pretty sympathetic to North Korea, but he has a deep well of expertise on North Korea issues. He's spent time in North Korea, apparently. And indeed, that's reflected in his writing. If you look at the average public article written by PLA commentators in the mainstream Chinese press compared to one article I read by Wang Yisheng on North Korea's cell phone network, there's a big discrepancy in terms of correct analysis of the historical evolution of North Korea's cell phone network and very detailed analysis, long, just like 4, 5, 6 pages. A lot of these PLA commentators' articles are 500 to 1,000 characters, 1 to 2 pages, pretty short, very general. This is not to say that PLA commentators are dumb or uninformed. They are generally not trained as North Korea experts. Compared with the internally focused PLA expertise on North Korea, there's a big gap. And so I think it's important to understand that the PLA does have a desire to understand more about North Korea, to create objective assessments on North Korean capabilities, but that is not the image they present to the outside world.
So you talked about a little bit in your paper about that gap between the public commentating and the private. And both in your paper and in the program, we were talking about border security. So border issues along the Chinese-North Korean border. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that illustrates that commentating gap?
So a quick primer on China-North Korea border security is really the issue came to the fore earlier this year. In very early January 2015, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs revealed that a North Korean soldier had killed 4 Chinese civilians end December 2014. And that really brought to a fore this discussion again about North Korea hurting China, North Korea being a bad influence on the Northeast region. What was revealed through basically investigative reporting and a rereading of U.S. analysis of China-North Korea relations from the early 2000s, what you see is border security issues have long been a problem in their relationship. John Thasek wrote a great book chapter in 2006 on PLA views of North Korea. And one of the things he documents very well is that, dating back to 2003, 2004, 2005, there were already incidents of KPA, North Korean military soldiers, killing Chinese civilians, Chinese PLA soldiers. Most of the time, Chinese coverage has portrayed them this year as hungry North Korean soldiers, understandably wanting some food. So there have been interviews in the Chinese press with Chinese families who have been harassed, robbed by North Korean soldiers, and they say, well, we dare not resist. This is not a new issue. The thing is that it's being highlighted again recently, and it's really opened the floodgates to talk about this. And the key is that the South Korean media talked about this, and it got on the Chinese web. And I think it forced the MFA to respond and acknowledge this, and they've been more open about it so far. And so the question is, the PLA knows it's an issue. They've addressed it as an issue. What have they done to fix border security? Andrew Scobell and Mark Kozad, in an article last year, documented well that the PLA has tried to take steps to improve this. And importantly, Chang Wen-chien, who's now the Minister of Defense in China, wrote an article about border security and building a better border for China back in, I believe, 2009. So this public discussion of previous PLA work on North Korean border issues obviously shows they understand it's a problem. They've been trying to deal with the problem. But fast forwarding again to this year, when it was highlighted again in the news as a problem, the Chinese PLA commentators spoke about this, and Wang Hongguang, we've covered before, wrote an article calling for an electric border fence to be built along the border. The problem is that his analysis, about a page and a half, wasn't very detailed, wasn't very in-depth, and didn't reference any of the work the PLA has done the last 10 years about these border issues. So if you simply looked at Wang Hongguang's article as representative of the PLA efforts on border security, you would think the PLA is doing a pretty lax job. Obviously, border security issues being as they are, they haven't been very successful. But the point is that they haven't tried, and you would not see that through Wang Hongguang's article. So I think even when they're talking about the same issue, there's still a gap.
These guys get on TV, or they get an article published. What are they talking about? What are they saying about North Korea? What is different or is making people pay more attention?
PLA commentators are increasingly talking about North Korea collapse, North Korea's strategic liability to China, North Korean provocations, and how China should respond. Again, the case study for my article is this December 2014 Wang Hongguang article. Obviously more critical than most of North Korea. In there, he details a little bit of thinking of North Korean collapse, but also how China should respond to future provocations. And after North Korea launched a missile and it nearly impacted a Chinese passenger jet, General Wang wrote an article that was very critical of North Korea for threatening Chinese lives and not giving forewarning. He even actually criticized the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs for not taking a hard enough line on North Korea, which is something I haven't seen before from any other PLA commentators. There is increasing discussion of North Korea's value as a buffer, North Korea's value as an ally. Another article I mentioned in the paper is an article from 2011 by Tong Jianquan, who was previously a PLA Navy and then worked as a researcher in the PLA's think tank, the Academy of Military Sciences, and now is a researcher at the MFA's think tank, the China International Institute for Studies. He, in this article, draws a distinction between the China-North Korea relationship being an assurance relationship and the United States relationship with Seoul and the United States relationship with Tokyo being an alliance relationship. Historically, everyone likes to talk about the China-North Korea alliance, so I thought it was a very interesting, clear delineation questioning whether this really is an alliance or not. So there's more discussion of this coming out from the PLA. One of the questions is, why? Is this something they've just started thinking about? Probably not. From PLA, they're smart people. They think about a whole lot of things. But the question is, why is it coming out now? It really seems that there's more space for critical views of North Korea from the PLA, from the Chinese government in general, from Chinese academics in general, and the Chinese media. So this is one of the things that I was trying to explore is, what are those boundaries? How far can a PLA commentator go on North Korea before getting punished? I think there are certain bounds, and I would suggest that the boundary on how critical you can be of North Korea is much stricter than the boundary of how supportive you can be of North Korea. But there are bounds, and they obviously understand those boundaries.
So an issue comes up that's North Korea related. Does the PLA start pushing these guys out to the media and say, hey, now's our time, get on CCTV or publish with People's Daily? What's the process where these guys are getting out there?
How does a PLA commentator wake up in the morning at home and end up on TV, right? That was my question when I started doing this research. And I don't think it's really been looked at before in depth. I don't have the definitive answer to it. I feel pretty comfortable with my answer. From interviews with PLA people, with other Chinese government officials, academics, it seems that the universal understanding is that this is really a business decision. This is a response by the Chinese commercialized media desire to get PLA on the screen. The Chinese media is increasingly commercialized, which means they need revenue. Revenue comes from ad dollars. Ad dollars comes from viewers, and Chinese viewers like to watch the PLA. You know, as one Chinese interviewee told me, okay, sure, these MFA guys, these diplomats want to go on TV, but they speak so diplomatically. It's not interesting. Why would you want to go watch someone say, yes, North Korea, it's an interesting relationship? No, you want to get someone on TV and say, oh, North Korea, so frustrating. Look at this. They're damaging Chinese interests. What are they doing? We don't understand them. It's entertaining. This is how you get people to tune in. You get something interesting. Obviously, there are constraints about who can go on TV, right? It's not the brand new PLA Academy graduates working in Xinjiang who gets to go on TV, right? These are, again, these trained professional propaganda people. Even within that batch, there are only some of them who are approved to go on TV. They usually go on domestic TV. They have to get special approval, which is probably mostly granted for Phoenix TV. They rarely interact with the foreign media. And when they do go on TV or when they do write in the Chinese press, they have restrictions on what they can say. I spoke with one Chinese academic, and he told me that Chinese PLA commentators can generally write what they want within normal bounds on policy issues, but they have more restrictions on what they can say on technical issues. So what you don't see if you read a lot of these PLA commentaries is a objective, scientific, academic, technical analysis of North Korea's missile program, right? What you're probably not going to see is a range assessment on how far could a North Korean ICBM go. It's not really their goal. Again, their goal is to ultimately, first and foremost, shape Chinese domestic opinion, and then maybe to signal to foreign audiences. They're not supposed to be out there debating with IISS military balance about the size of the North Korean military. They're not supposed to be out there debating with U.S. government's assessments of North Korean nuclear yields or missile ranges. These guys are shaping, you know, the general contours of thinking on North Korea. There's really restriction on that. You know, the Wall Street Journal earlier this year ran an article talking about how in a meeting between U.S. and Chinese experts with some former government representatives, but was not a track one discussion, there were new numbers released from the Chinese side of estimates for North Korea's nuclear stockpile. And some of the Chinese delegation included PLA members. And the Global Times came out in response and said that these assessments were done by an old retired physicist and basically depicted as him just making normal calculations that anyone does about North Korea's nuclear program. Because don't we all just sit in our kitchen, retired, hanging around Beijing, saying, I really think, if I think long and hard about this, I can estimate how many nuclear weapons North Korea has. This is totally normal activity for a retired physicist to do. And that was the Chinese line. And that really seems to suggest that there is indeed a limit to what technical assessments they're allowed to provide in the Chinese media.
Are most of these commentaries in Chinese? Are they in Chinese and then translated to English? Or do some of these guys write in English?
I personally have not seen any of them write in English. My understanding is that they write first in Chinese, it's first published in Chinese. Then sometimes the published articles are translated into English and republished. Again, the very important December 2014 Wang Hongguang article, originally published in Chinese. And then it was translated, it seems, by China Military Online and put on their website. That was one of two out of 28 articles that I found originally published in Chinese on Global Times on North Korea issues by PLA experts that were translated. Two out of 28, that's one out of 14. It's a very low percentage of articles that are translated into English. So then the question is, why are they translated at all? Who picks which articles? And that's really a good question. I doubt it's because the intern they have at the office that year is bored and wants to translate someone into English. This is probably a conscious decision. I doubt it's a decision that Xi Jinping makes. It's probably a lower level decision. But it's a conscious decision of how do we want to present PLA thinking to the outside world. In my view, by definition, something translated into English is no longer intended for a domestic Chinese audience. So if the PLA commentator's first goal is to shape Chinese domestic opinion, maybe that's the goal of the Chinese language article. But as soon as you translate it into English, although lots of people in China speak English, they're not consuming news regularly in English. That's intended by definition for a foreign audience. So then it's, you know, which articles do they translate? And the two articles that I found out of the 28 in Chinese, the two that were translated into English, were both critical of North Korea, one from Luo Yun, one from Wang Hongguang. And it seems that these translators, people who decide these things, are picking out articles that are naturally critical of North Korea, presenting that view to foreign audiences. And so it's not that they translate every article or that they translate articles that are more pro-North Korea. They're translating ones that they want to present.
So is the Korean and U.S. press picking up on the English translations, or are they picking up on the original Chinese publications?
Both. I think obviously there's more attention paid to the English translations, but Wang Hongguang wrote one article in 2013 in a pretty obscure history journal about North Korea that was picked up from the Chinese language by the South China Morning Post. Granted, it's a regional media, but they picked it up, wrote an article on it. I don't think a lot of analysts even, you know, picked up on that South China Morning Post article.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was there. So, you know, give them credit. They spotted this a year before most people. I think most analysts, especially casual analysts, naturally go for the English language publications first. I wake up in the morning, I look for the English stuff, and you have to make a conscious decision to go and look for the Chinese stuff. And I think one of the important things that I learned here is you really do have to make that effort to go to the Chinese language, because that's what is much more authentic, you know, it's much more authoritative. If you simply look at the English, there's not much, and they're not as interesting. There's not a diverse array of views.
If the English is meant for U.S. and maybe South Korea audience, how are they trying to push things to North Korea or signal things to North Korea through the commentaries?
So that's a good question. You know, how do we understand exactly which commentaries are directed at who? And I think adding another layer to this assessment is looking at the larger strategic picture and timing of these commentaries. So I think one good example of this would be January 2014, less than a month after Kim Jong-un's uncle, Jang Chung-taek, was arrested and executed summarily. The next month, January 2014, the PLA, according to media reports, ran a large military exercise in the Shenyang military region. I think the media reports put it at 100 or 150,000 troops. It seems that this exercise was intended as a political message to North Korea of Chinese displeasure. I spoke with one former U.S. government analyst who said, you know, he had talked to PLA people and they told him that this was really a message intended for North Korea. Okay. But then the question is, you know, what role do PLA commentators play in this signaling? So they've had the exercise, but they're not writing a press release saying this exercise is intended to show that we're displeased with Kim Jong-un's execution of our main guy in Pyongyang, Jang Song-taek, right? And this is where the PLA commentators come in and help a little bit. Luo Yun, the PLA commentator, was on Phoenix TV January 2014 and was talking about a lot of international issues, but obviously the topic of North Korea came up. And he said, you know, Kim Jong-un was acting wildly and is unpredictable and there's brinkmanship involved. And, you know, China had to prepare for the worst. I think if you just look at his comment on Phoenix TV, you know, as an American, as a foreign analyst, you're like, well, yeah, we agree. China and everyone else probably should prepare for the worst. Don't know when that's going to come. Don't know if it'll come. But, you know, that's pretty reasonable thinking. But then if you put it in the context of, oh, the PLA is doing a military exercise right around North Korea. North Korea just executed China's main guy in Pyongyang. Put the pieces together, I think it demonstrates comprehensive signal that China was trying to send to North Korea. And I think that was a really good example of how this message was intended for North Korea. North Korea governments, I'm sure, has analysts who speak wonderful English. Our government employees know that. And I'm sure they have people who speak wonderful Chinese because they interact with the Chinese. So they can get signals from both. They probably watch Chinese commentaries in both languages, but I would assume that they watch more Chinese commentary. I'm sure there are analysts who are capable of following that debate, but I have no insight into how the North Korean government interprets those signals. I found no evidence that KCNA has covered this debate, has reacted to this debate, has lambasted Wang Hongguang. I haven't seen any response to this. KCNA has seen fit in the past to criticize U.S. experts for their views on North Korea. I haven't seen that return to Chinese experts. So it's hard to understand or guess how North Korea interprets these signals. But I think it's important itself to just know that China is trying to send them. And hopefully this paper will help set a little bit of a foundation for that.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, and your paper is excellent at talking about these issues. Nathan, thanks so much for joining us on Korean Context and talking about this.
Thank you so much, Nicholas. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, asking me to write the paper. It's been wonderful.
Our guest today was Nathan Beauchamp-Mostafaga, former editor of the China Brief Journal at the Jamestown Foundation, and author of the KI Academic Paper Series report titled Deciphering PLA Media Commentaries on North Korea, Going Rogue or Staying on Script. Thank you so much for listening to KI's Korean Context podcast, and we hope you'll join us again next time.